Hello and welcome back to the official Scottish Rugby Podcast. I'm Jamie McMillan. With me, as always, are Al Kellock, Rachel Malcolm and Chris Patterson. On the show this week, we look back on the match with Wales in the Guinness Six Nations, and we look ahead to the upcoming Pro 14 fixtures for both Glasgow Warriors and Edinburgh. Well, I guess it's time now to reflect on the match with Wales at the weekend in the Guinness Six Nations. Lots to talk about in that match. Rachel, I'll come to you first, because on the back of a good win against England, there was a lot of hope for that fixture against Wales. It wasn't a bad performance by Scotland, but they just didn't get the win. What's your take on the game?
Yeah, I think, you know, they started the game really well. You would probably think from watching the first 20, 30 minutes even, that game was going to go in a similar vein and they were going to put in a really solid performance. I think there was quite a few kind of key moments in the game which turned the game and had a massive impact on probably the feeling within the team and the way they kind of saw themselves within that game. I think discipline let us down a little bit across kind of start to finish, and a lot of the kind of game-changing moments came from poor discipline. But like you say, there's a lot of promising stuff to take from it, and I don't think it's necessarily always a bad thing to have a little bit of, you know, a setback falling on a big high, because it means that you learn and you keep pushing forward again.
Al, similar for you when you reflect back in the game?
Okay, I think ultimately it was massively disappointing on the back of the week before. And you could see that in the players as well. Like, to go down there and do something the first time in 30 years, there was an opportunity to then push on. And, you know, like, I mean, like, I'm saying all this, we're not out of the tournament. Like, there's still, I thought the first half, and then add that on to what was done down at Twickenham. For me, Scotland have been playing the best rugby in the tournament, genuinely. I mean, France are right up there, but I thought for 120 minutes, Scotland have been the best team. Like, so threatening going forward. And then there was, you know, 40 minutes of it coming unstuck. And Rach has already talked about discipline. Big Xander's red card was a massive moment within the game. And how you react from that red card, because I actually could have gone on and won that game still. But the first 10, 15 minutes after the red card, some players are doing exactly the same as what they were before, and other players are a wee bit more standoffish. Should we change our tactics? Should we be doing different things? And it took a little bit of a bedding in period, as it always will. And we'll go on and talk about the red card in a wee bit more detail, but it was more the period after it. It just took a little bit long just to find defeat again.
Yeah, Mossy, you were at the fixture. You were working at it, but yeah, what's your take on it then?
Oh, great game to start with, you know, brilliant game for the tournament. You could almost say that it underlines how finely balanced international rugby is, and the massive effect little things can have within a game. It was a strange game in many ways, where the momentum shifted one way or the other, probably more than it usually does. Usually there's a momentum, like one or two momentum shifts, and then that other team has it. But that one just kept, as the score did towards the latter end of the game, just keep flicking back and forward. So not a lot in it. I thought Scotland played well. I thought they actually defended well. But then you take a step back and say, we lost at home against a team that wasn't too high in confidence, and we conceded a bonus point, you know, defeat effectively. So they don't really marry up. The discipline was a big issue that everybody's spoken about. I've yet to see kind of finalised stats, but one set of stats I saw had the penalty count as 15-all. Another one had it at 13-11 and in Scotland's favour. So obviously they're not that accurate, because a penalty is a penalty. So I could go through it myself, and I probably will to finalise that. But the key thing sometimes in discipline is not the volume or the number of penalties; it's when they're conceded. And I think what hurt us at the weekend was when we conceded a penalty, we conceded two or three in the same 2 or 3 minute spell, and it had a massive net effect of ultimately ending in points for Wales. So real fine margins, some brilliant play, for both sides really, but definitely one that's a frustration because of the result, but also because of trying to figure out the reason the result was poor.
Yeah, and Al mentioned it there, that a key moment in the game was that red card. Now, we will come on to that, but I just wanted to chat about it first, because, you know, Ali Price, I thought, was excellent again in that game. And the first try that we saw from Darcy was just pure magic. What were your thoughts on it, and Ali, and any other players, guys, that jumped out in that match?
My first thought was that Darcy must have been about 3 metres offside.
And that's what I thought.
I was like, he can't have been onside.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought as well.
But it was brilliant. And John Barclay was talking afterwards about the fact that it would have been preordained. I think Griscuit was intimating it probably wasn't. I think it probably was. It would have been a look at how the Welsh defend. But it was a fantastic bit of skill, and I completely agree with you. I mean, Alec Price has been a standout. He's been great, not just in a Scotland shot, but in a Glasgow shot as well. Been really impressed with the way he's kind of the influence he's having on the game. Like he's bringing other people with him. He's always a talented player, but he's bringing other people with him so well at the moment. But yeah, that was a phenomenal bit of skill.
It's funny when people assume that something like that's planned or not planned, as if it's actually planned. And listen, in the 15th minute, we're going to do this. I think it's planned. It's planned in the sense that it's a tactic that you'd have to be aware of across 80 minutes. But that's as far as it's planned. The decision and the execution comes from players identifying when it's on. Like you'd be aware of, you know, that chip in behind, aware of how Wales defend, especially near their own 22. But you still have to see it. You still have to execute it. It's still at least a two-man play, because I think Darcy probably spots it, calls it in. Ali then has to react, and on his wrong foot, his right foot, his left-footed kicker, just produce this dink over the top that Darcy didn't even break stride, caught in the full. Brilliant score, brilliant. As I say, we said so many good tries from kind of both sides. It's kind of lit the championship up a bit, but brilliant score.
Yeah, and another try scored by Hoggy as well, who's not only, you know, in cracking form on the pitch, but when you actually hear him speak and his role as captain, he's performing that role really well now and seems to really matured into that role. But Rach, just a nod to Hoggy and his two tries and his performances to date.
Yeah, he's been really solid. I think his decision making's been brilliant on the pitch in terms of him personally, whether to carry, pass, get other people into the game. And that's shown in the meters he's made across the two games so far. And like you say, I think he's carrying himself and the boys really well as captain. And you know, straight after the game, he's right behind his teammates and saying all the right things to the press as well, which is hard when the emotions are running high as well. So no, I think he's doing a great job and it's great to see him playing really well as well. Because, you know, he came on the podcast before and he was getting a bit of a tough time probably this time last year. And I think it's good to see him, as you say, come through that and really play the way we know he can.
Not to ever take anything away from Hoggy's finish, because it was good, but it was poor defence. Like, I mean, to line up the way they lined up,
his second try.
Yeah, his second try. They had the opportunity to, I mean, somebody like Stuart Hogg, you want to have 1.5 men on him, and they had the opportunity to have that, but they didn't. And
yeah, that was.
Know, anybody on that outside break, when he does that hitch kick, is going to struggle, but that close in, and it was touched on in Combs afterwards, either during or afterwards, the Welsh needed to get their spacing better. But give him half a yard, which is what he got, and he finished it brilliant.
Yeah.
It just shows you what quality players do, though, like, and not even without the ball, the fear that puts in, I think it was Owen Watkin who missed it, who had an amazing tap tackle at the end, and maybe touching that as well. So he made up for it. But like the threat that Hoggy poses probably forces Owen Watkin onto his heels, and even in the wrong position. And, you know, it's a. I said right at the top that it's fine margins. That's as fine the margins are. Like they're so, so thin to, you know, Owen Watkin just slightly rocking back on his heels to concede a try to making a tap tackle on Doohan. And when usually from my experience of tap tackles, the stronger the player, the harder the tap has to be. I mean, to tap tackle me was pretty simple. I would have kind of fallen over with a gust of wind. But Dewey, with a lot of power from his legs and his
unbelievable
his thighs down, you have to properly tap that to get it down. And an amazing tap tackle, unfortunately for us. But Watkin made up for it. But you're right; he should have been in a better defensive position to stop Hoggy. But Hoggy still had to get that down as well. He wriggled and fought to get the downward pressure. And I agree; he's playing really well.
I think with tap tackle as well, you know, the most infuriating tackle you can get, because you think you're away and you just feel this little tap and you're down. And yeah, I mean, I didn't play to any level that you guys have performed at. But
that's not true.
Yeah, we'll talk about that more depth later on. But you know, you guys must have been playing in situations where you think you're clean through, and then all of a sudden you just feel this hand and you're just so frustrated. But you're right, for Dewey to go down, it must have been powerful. And actually, when you watch it back, you often think, I know hindsight is a wonderful thing, but if he hadn't stepped inside, would he have been in the clear? But, you know, you can't really...
It probably goes back to what you said. He probably, you know, thought and felt as if he was away. And I think his step inside actually beat Rhys Zammit, who was covering over as well, which made that tap tackle even more important. I know exactly what you mean. I got one of my worst injuries came for a tap tackle, actually, when I thought I was away in the clear and I got tap tackled behind and fell face first into somebody's knee. It wasn't pretty, oh. But for that split second, you think you're away and then, no,
PG,
dragged down.
PG and...
Samoa. It was Samoa, eh? Did you play in that game?
No, I was on the same tour, but I was midweek.
Oh, sorry, Al. Sorry to bring it up.
Sorry, I was on it. I'm an awful lot younger. Tap tackle these days, Jamie. I don't really obviously not playing anymore, but in the back garden, if one of the kids gets away from it, you can see the surprise in their face as well.
Great tactic. Well, we need to talk about the pivotal moment in the game. Was the red card to Xander. Now, we saw a red card the week before, a similar situation for Ireland. You know, watching it on TV, Mossy, you were watching it, and Sam Warburton actually commented at the time he was unsure about the decision, felt a wee bit unfair, but we've all had time to kind of look at it now. What's your guys' take on that red card and the decision that was made?
It's so hard at the time, especially when you're totally involved in the moment. And at the moment, in the moment at the time, I thought, I could totally understand the red card. I thought it was a little bit harsh because there was a genuine attempt to clear the player. Now, I think now, having loads of time to look at it, I think it is a red card. Harsh or not, it is a red card because there was contact with Wyn Jones' head. Now, I think it was completely different. I said this in commentary to Peter Amanes the week before, because I think there was no ball threat on Amanes the week before. He just smashed into the player, whereas Xander's actually affected a pretty decent clear out other than the glancing blow to Wyn Jones's head. Now, the reason I think it's a red card, is because the distance of which Xander's ran before he's cleared out leaves a big window of chance as to what he might hit when he gets there. Now, I think he's gone with the intention of getting low, getting underneath Wyn Jones. Hoggy's dragged Wyn Jones up, but that's out with Xander's control. So I think if we're serious about player welfare and looking after people's heads, we can't leave anything to chance when it comes to a clear out. Now, the other side is, how do you clear that person out? You know, there was a bad one in the England game as well, where there's a crocodile roll to the side where he ripped the player off to the side. So, and I think what we're going to get to, as I saying this earlier to you guys, is a situation that we've probably seen with a competition for a high ball, a competition in the air over the last 2 years, where we're now getting players making the decision before there's any contact in the air, not to go up and just almost surrender possession to the player who's in the air first. Because if you do make contact and there isn't any contact at all and the player in the air hits the ground, you could be red carded. So you're leaving too much to chance. So I think what we may see is players just almost surrendering the turnover rather than taking a risk of a clear out that, you know, if you hit ahead, it's going to be a red card.
I agree with you. And then that's where he's got to go. They've got to either stop the player putting himself in there for a turnover, which changes the game completely, or they've got to stop the... And it's generally the later clear-out. When two players arrive at the same time, we're not seeing the same issues. It's when somebody's caught maybe 5 or 10 yards behind because the first clear-out's not been as effective, that almost it's a, I've got to stand off this now, because the risk I'm taking is so great compared to a turnover, albeit a turnover is reasonably significant, but it's a high ball that one you're talking about, 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
The player that ball's been kicked to is the player that's going to take it.
But it's a way of changing behaviour, though.
Yeah.
And we've seen that what I'm hinting at is the process of behavioural change from the player attacking the kick in the air. Like, you just actually make a decision 2 or 3 steps earlier and don't leave anything at risk. Listen, where I know probably an agreement, it's like, how do you get that player out of there? And you're right, Al, like, I think the start of the season, penalties were given really quickly for the jackler being in position and getting onto the ball. So arguably, we could award the penalty immediately. So it's almost stops that 2 or 3 seconds of, right, I need to accelerate in and clear this. Or you look at the position of the jackler and say, your head's below your hips, which in the law book isn't meant to be. So it's definitely something that needs found. But I do think if there's if there's a phrase that you could use as an innocent red card, I think Xander's was an innocent red card because he actually went with the intention of driving the player off the ball. He got as low as he possibly could, but he wasn't in total control, and there was a risk that if the player moved, when Jones moved, then you hit his head. So it's one I think that will change the course of kind of rugby or underline the change of course over the next few weeks and months.
The other thing about Xander's clear is when Jones was a threat, when Peter O'Mahony the week before, he'd ended up taking out a player who wasn't...
Thomas Francis.
Yeah, Thomas Francis, who wasn't the threat of the ball at that point, whereas when Jones was a threat and needed to be taken out. And we've all played, and you know, you can imagine the Monday morning when it's like, well, why have you not gone on to clear that? If when Jones gets that clear out, the question is directly to Xander, why have you not gone out to clear that out? Now, he should have been a yard, 2 yards, 3 yards closer. And then, you know, he wins the race.
Yeah, I think that's one of the big things that is what could change around how we approach these situations is having players close. Like, it's how we support that ball carrier. Because if you're there sooner, then those situations don't develop. But, so, you know, we're saying, what can he do there? And that is the answer, is be there sooner. So then he's not as got a chance to get over the ball. But like you say, I just think, as a player, what are you going to do there? Because he's got to try and clear him, but the position he's in, there's just no way he's going to be able to do it legally. So I think in terms of what might change from a behaviour change point of view, it's about how we support the ball carrier.
And Rich, you're
still playing, Rich, aye? So
our biggest focus is all about speed to contact. So like speed to contact, that ball carrier, so that kind of situation doesn't develop. Because when you've got players in your opposition who are good over ball, and you know what it's like, it's just, if they have that time to get in a good position, there is no moving them.
It's almost a failure of someone else, from someone else, that requires Xander to come in from a distance.
Yeah.
It's almost flipping on its head and saying, if you're the player trying to take the turnover, you have to do that immediately. Now, what we're actually saying is we probably are moving towards, you also have to, in attack, clear immediately. So you can't then enter that ruck after 3-4 seconds from a distance because the risks are too high. But like, it's an area that is going to have to continue to evolve, because you remember going back 5-6 years, there was a big spate of it was hamstrings and people's hamstrings from getting themselves into positions, and they were in there for a prolonged period. I think it's how big Paul O'Connell did his as well. That, you know, you're in there for a prolonged period and then getting hit. So they've speeded that part up now.
And they've also changed that through supporting your body weight is far more strictly governed now than before. Because remember, it used to be your legs wide, your whole upper body could be over the ball and you're vulnerable to exposing your neck or as you say, your hamstrings. So it's, I think World Rugby are doing a good job and really trying to clear that area up. But it's so difficult, isn't it? Because the charter of the game is to ensure that there's a genuine contest for the ball the whole time.
Now, although he wasn't a Scotland player, I think we do have to mention the Welsh performance of their winger. I forget his name already. Rhys Zammit, what's his name, boss?
Louis Rhys Zammit.
That's it. I'll go back and do that again.
Keep that in.
Now, although not a Scotland player, I think we had to maybe just touch on the performance of Louis Rhys Zammit. Plays for Gloucester, but was a star for Wales at the weekend. Unbelievable pace. And, you know, you talked about it before, Mossy, about, we were talking about Hoggy's spiral kick and how difficult it is to do a kick while you're moving at the same time. We saw Rhys Zammit for his try. Phenomenal pace, great kick through. Just a note on his performance, because are players like that and plays like that, are they indefensible? Is it so hard to defend against, or what can you do?
Well, one of the biggest threats to any defence is just raw gas, like out and out pace. Kind of reminded me of probably the fastest player Al and I would have played with was Tom Evans, and he was like a sprinter's pace. And the way Louis Zammit took off when he got the ball, yeah, there's more space because you're down to 14 men, but that threat of his pace, I was lucky enough to be there, and honestly, seeing it in the flesh, I was like, wow, you could just see instantly it's sprinter's pace. But then to have the quality to chip and chase, now that looked like a natural quality to me. I think if you try and coach that, or if you work, you can improve it, of course you can, but you've got to have that just growing up with the ball, doing that time and time again for it to look as effortless. But he was just that threat of his pace. Sometimes if there's space to attack is really almost impossible to defend. But how can you defend it? You can try and get in his way after he kicks, but then he's that quick as pasture. He could obviously be a bit wider in the midfield, but they'd already broken down the right hand, Scotland's right hand side, and dragged him in. So it was good play by Wales to kind of stretch you. But with that pace, it's really, really hard to cover. And as I say, the execution was top notch as well.
Yeah, he took the tries brilliantly well. It's funny you mentioned Tom Evans, because I was sitting watching it, or I think it was in a WhatsApp group during the game, exactly the comparison I made. Reasonably straight line, he did a great step back inside, but reasonably straight line runner, just out and out speed. But the other thing that shouldn't be underestimated is his kick at the end of the game. Like he had three moments in that game that won Wales a game. That kick at the end of the game under pressure from Hoggy was phenomenal. I mean, it was a 40, 50-yard kick that just gave Wales the territory they needed to go on and win. But he looked like a class act.
It could maybe have gone wrong, that one. Technically, it wasn't perfect, but like, it was just... And that's a sign of a quality player as well, where like sometimes players need to be in the right position, the ball in the right position, to be given time and space to kick. He pulls that out, just manufacturing it out of almost nothing. You know, that's a sign of a quality player who's kind of grown up, trying things, knowing the game, you know, just figuring things out. I'd say he had another really important intervention. Obviously, his two tries, his kick, whatever, but his pass wasn't the greatest pass to Liam Williams for Liam Williams' try. But there was a maturity there for a 20-year-old that once he got on the outside edge, I could almost see his brain thinking, here, I could score again here. But he didn't. He just fixed. I think it was Hoggy and gave the pass. The pass could have been better. But that, for a young player on so much with so much excitement and such a high, he could have kind of butchered that, for use of a better phrase, by going for the line. He didn't. He did the right thing. So definitely one to watch.
Mossy, Al, you mentioned Tom Evans about the fastest player that you've played with. Do you agree with that, Al? Is he one of the fastest players you've played with? But also on that, who's the fastest player you played against?
Tommy would be, I think, straight line speed, the fastest player I've ever played with. Like sprinter speed, I say Carl and Iles, but actually I just finished. But Carl and Iles came over for a while and played the American Sevens player, who he was at Glasgow for a season, but played a little bit of club rugby. He was learning the game at that stage. But Tommy was phenomenal speed. But then on the fastest player I played against, I never worried about, and I think I've said this in this podcast before, I never worried about the big lads getting the ball and running straight at you, because all they were really trying to do was knock you over. It's when you were standing about four or five out in the defensive line and you had like Mossy or it was Shane Williams from an Ospreys and Wales point of view. When you saw him coming in and trying to get the ball a little bit closer to 10 and you were defending in front of him, at that point there was fear. Jason Robinson as well. His ability to jump in there and change direction mid-air, I still don't know how he did it, but phenomenal. And to Mossy's point about what Hoggy's doing to players at the moment, the very best players in the world can do that to anybody, not just the front five guys who get themselves caught a little bit wide. And that's what we're seeing from the likes of Hoggy at the moment. They give themselves more time because the players almost sit off them worried about what they're going to do. And for me, other than Mossy, it would have been Shane Williams.
Moss, fastest player
there's a few.
Played against?
Oh, there'd be a few. I played against Tom, so he was rapid. Brian Habana was particularly quick. Christian Cullen, Jeff Wilson, these guys were real elegant runners. Who's that?
Martin Williams. I'm just remembering back to you trying to chase him down in 2006, 2008.
Oh, what? He was trying to chase me down.
No, and you got an intercept.
No, I got the intercept. I got the intercept, and I've spoken to Martin Williams about this a few times. It was down there, wasn't it? It was almost the last play of the game, and I intercepted. I said Geth and Jenkins his pass on hour 22, and I took off for the opposite line, and they'd won reasonably comfortably. And Martin Williams, he chased me all the way. I was like, what are you doing? It made me run fast all the way. I mean, in all those days, I was always going to make it, but I was like, I would rather have made it without having to run flat out the whole way. But no, Nugget was he was a quicker thinker than he was runner, old Martin Williams, top lad, brilliant player. But these guys, like say, Habana, Lomu, Cullen, Dan Luger for England, Jason Robinson, I mean, there was a lot of gas. And what people have said already, what people with that speed need is just a little bit of space. and they can be devastating. But they're also really important defensively, covering tackles, getting back, making defensive tackles that nobody really expects anybody to get near, and also kick chase. Like if you had a poor kick and somebody like that chased it, it's instantly a good kick because they're there before the receiver has any time.
Well, it may be a fallow week in the Guinness Six Nations, but Pro 14 rugby returns this weekend. I think on Friday night, we've got the match between Glasgow Warriors and Ulster at Scotstoun. And then on Saturday, we see Edinburgh take on Munster at home. Al, Glasgow Ulster, it's usually quite a tasty affair, quite a close-run affair. What's your thoughts on that upcoming fixture?
Yeah, well, Ulster have obviously been going fairly well, and they have utilised a huge amount of players as well. Like they've spread it across their squad, so albeit they won't, it'll be similar to Glasgow, they won't get everybody back. They're carrying a bit of form, but you know, Glasgow have shown better signs with the second Edinburgh game, and you know, beginning to look as if they were settling in a wee bit. So it's a big game for Glasgow. I'm working at it actually. Big game for Glasgow at home. Always a physical encounter, and generally speaking, whoever wins a physical encounter wins the game.
On Glasgow, it's brilliant news. Jack Dempsey came out, was it yesterday or the day before? Certainly early on this week. He's a back row player they've signed for next year, who I've always admired. I didn't know, like it came out of the blue a little bit, but I think that's a really important signing for Glasgow. He's an aggressive, abrasive back row player, 6 or 8. And somebody I've always kind of, when I've seen internationally or when I've seen playing Super Rugby and the likes, I've always admired. So that's a good signing, Al, isn't it?
No, it was a big signing, yeah, absolutely. A huge amount of experience, both club level and international levels, and still young.
Yeah. Still young as well. That's the thing. It's a real hard edge back row player who I think can be explosive, and I think he'll really suit the Guinness Pro 14 as well. And it just popped into my mind, because that's how Ulster play. Like when you play Ulster, there's obviously all games are physical, but there's games that are physical that almost seem slower and real attritional, and there's games that are physical that feel powerful and dynamic. And my memories of playing Ulster, and they're still the same, is that real dynamism and physicality that they play with. And let's hope Glasgow can come out on top on Friday.
So looking at Edinburgh now, though, they've got Munster at home, another Irish team, but another tough opponent. Well, I guess they're all tough opponents now. Edinburgh will be looking to kind of just get going again in this campaign and try and find some of the form that they had at the end of last season.
Yeah, and it's almost it's not the polar opposite of what we said about Ulster, but the Munster traditionally is a slower, more physical battle than the dynamic battle. They're going to grind you. They're going to scrutinise every decision. They're going to make every execution really difficult. But Edinburgh have been training well. Obviously, the games were postponed last week, so they've not played for a few weeks, so the players will be desperate to play. There'll be some released back from international setup. But it's important that the Edinburgh can get back to winning and winning at home and get up that league. Who knows how many games will be left. There's been so much disruption this season that it's really important to win what's in front of you. And it's Munster who'll pose a lot of questions on Saturday night at BT Murrayfield for Edinburgh. But Edinburgh, I think, are so desperate for a game. If they can be accurate, they stand a good chance.
Yeah, Jamie, you say all games are difficult, but Ulster and Munster are certainly up the very top of that level. And that's actually a little bit surprised as to why Ireland aren't showing the same form in the Guinness Six Nations. And they're picking from teams that are winning. Now, it's a different scenario now. It's a different group of players. There will be the occasional player that will drop back who needs game time. But it's an opportunity as well. Like I said this all along. Like I remember this as a young player as well, when the likes of Scott Murray and Nathan Hines were away playing in the Six Nations. It gave me an opportunity. So we'll see that in Ulster and in Glasgow. And Edinburgh and Munster will be exactly the same. It will be an opportunity to see some different players.
Well, another Scottish rugby news. Mikey Adamson, our very own referee, got his first run out for an international fixture at the weekend. And I thought he had a really good performance, Mikey. We all know Mikey at personal level, but great to see a Scottish referee back officiating at the top level, Moss.
Yeah, Six Nations, first one in the Six Nations for a long, long time. And he just looked so cool. I actually spoke to him this morning and about a couple of things, just touching on a few law questions, my go-to for my answer. It's quite a good go-to if you've got an international referee. But yeah, I just, you know, I thought he did really well. He looked really comfortable. He looked, you know, because it must be daunting. It is daunting. He said it was strange, obviously, without the fans, really, even to mark that occasion, I think, as well, from a referee perspective. But looked comfortable. Looked as if he was exactly at home where he should be. A really tough call on the... Well, it wasn't really a tough call, but it's caused a bit of debate on the Johnny May one, the try in the corner, whether he jumped into tackle or where he was scoring. So spoke through that. And I think most people think he was in the act of scoring, which he did. He jumped to score, he landed, jumped and didn't land his feet, he landed to score. So Mikey gave that one quite rightly. But if that situation happens further up the field and somebody tries to jump a tackle and land on their feet, then it's a different kettle of fish. So they had that kind of controversy. It's funny, and I said to him, it's funny how Six Nations games always throw up these wee things in his first game, but he did really, really well.
So Mossy, because you said Mikey's your go-to for the laws, on this podcast you're the go-to for the laws, what happens now when you take, because a lot of teams are doing it, taking a quick tap instead of going to the corner, taking a scrum, or the points, you take a quick tap, you pass it to a guy, and all of a sudden it's American football-esque, and whoever can jump the highest will score the try.
Well, I remember, you mentioned Shane Williams before. I remember Shane Williams kind of doing something similar to that before, and he got away with it. I think there's nothing that states in the law about jumping at a tackle, but it would come under dangerous play. And he did say if Johnny May jumped up and need Sperandi or Sperandino, who would try to make the covering tackle, I think then that probably becomes dangerous play. But I don't think you can jump over somebody in front of you. I think that would be deemed as dangerous. If there's a corner flagging type tackle to jump over, I think it's different as long as you're diving towards a line. But
my instant reaction was it was a jump and not a dive. And a dive to score the try is perfectly legal, but I felt it was a vertical jump. But then in saying that, the ball hit the ground before anything else. So therefore, does it turn into a dive? But I think it does cast up an awful lot of...
It's a lot of questions, eh?
And issues that, you know, you could take advantage of that law.
That's not what you're meant to promote, taking advantage of laws, Al.
That's what everybody does, isn't it? Somewhere within the bounds of the law.
They maybe do them, but they don't promote them.
Yeah, not a podcast.
Real kind of intricacies that come up in almost every Six Nations game, but yeah, well done to Mikey. He was hoping to get some many more.
No, I agree with you. I thought, like, he had a phenomenal game. That incident was, he refereed it the way it should have been refed. I suppose I'm just casting up with the law itself, but yeah, his demeanour was great. He managed to keep Owen Farrell, because there was a couple of flare incidents when Owen Farrell's obviously quite a vocal player towards the referee, and Mikey dealt with that well. For like you talk about daunting, like Mikey in his first kind of Six Nations game on Farrell and probably his 50th or 60th. So he's, you know, he's a man that knows what he's talking about. But Mikey dealt with it all brilliantly.
And sticking with the referee theme, flip it on its head. Unfortunately, Holly Davidson, our very own Holly, still not managed to get a run out. Another postponement for her. I think we're all just desperate for Holly to get out there, aren't we? And just get officiating a Pro 14 game.
I know, it's massively disappointing. She'll be sitting wondering when it's going to happen. I don't know when the next appointment schedule will be out, but hopefully we'll see her in that game, with a game that won't be affected by weather or any other challenges.